I'd like to talk a little bit today about lifetime reproductive success in adult female insects. I'll focus on insect herbivores and parasitoids. And I'd like to talk about whether that reproductive success is limited by the finite number of eggs that a female can mature, called egg limitation, or by the finite amount of time that the female has to find suitable hosts on which to lay those eggs, or time limitation. Now, whether insect reproductive success is limited by eggs or by time is a long-standing controversy. It goes back over 80 years. And resolving this controversy is important to our understanding of insect population dynamics because egg-limited females have much more strongly saturating functional responses. And it's also important to our understanding of insect oviposition behavior, where egg-limited females are predicted to be much more choosy about where they put their eggs. So what I'd like to do today is address this issue from both a theoretical and an experimental perspective. On the theory side, I'll just present results very quickly verbally. I'll present first two key predictions from basic life history models that predict that egg limitation is important. I'll then present the results of a model that challenged that idea and suggested that realistically high levels of spatial stochasticity in reproductive opportunity actually largely eliminates the importance of egg limitation. And then I'll present some of my own recent modeling results that explore that stochasticity hypothesis in a bit more detail. I'll then present a field test of the predictions, and I'll finally conclude that insect life histories evolve to produce a balanced risk of egg and time limitation. So let's begin with the theory. The first key prediction is that insects have to express some level of egg limitation in their populations in order for them to be at an evolutionary equilibrium. Now, how do we arrive at that prediction? Of course, in a sense, the optimal life history is for insects, an individual female, to invest in producing eggs and to invest in the soma to support her longevity such that she dies immediately after laying her last egg. That's the perfect life history in the sense that there's no wasted eggs and there's no wasted longevity. But the problem, of course, in achieving that perfect balance is that there's unpredictability in the environment. There's stochasticity. So there's unpredictable availability of hosts in the environment, and there's also unpredictability in the female's longevity. And when you incorporate that stochasticity into life history models, the outcome is always that there has to be some risk of egg limitation for you to have an evolutionary equilibrium. Now, the second key prediction that comes out of these basic life history models is that egg costs make a disproportionately large contribution to the overall cost of oviposition. So most of the life history models actually predict that egg limitation will be a minority condition in insect populations. That is, maybe only 5 or 10% of the total female population will actually be egg-limited. Nevertheless, these egg-limited females are quite important because for the few females who are egg-limited, the cost of the egg is quite large. An egg that's laid on a current host cannot be laid on a future host that might be higher quality. Whereas for the majority of females in the population who are time-limited, the time costs for those females are actually fairly small, because the time required to lay an egg is very small, typically, relative to the amount of time that's required to search for another host. So for that reason, egg costs make this disproportionately large contribution to the cost of oviposition, and therefore are predicted to be quite important in shaping oviposition behavior. So these ideas were challenged by Gerard Driessen, Jan Sevenster, and Jacinta Ehlers. And they built models that showed that if you incorporate realistically high levels of stochasticity, in their case spatial stochasticity, into models, it generates insect life histories where the females have very high fecundities and therefore very low levels of expected egg limitation. So I spent a good chunk of last year while I was on sabbatical exploring this stochasticity hypothesis in a bit more detail. And I'll just today give sort of three of the key results from that work, and I'll be happy to talk details with anybody later. First, and happily, I was able to confirm their basic result, that indeed, if you build spatial stochasticity, increasing levels of spatial stochasticity into models, it does depress the expectation for egg limitation in these populations. But I only get that result when eggs are relatively costly. If instead eggs are inexpensive, as is true for many parasitoids, this effect is largely lost. Second, the increase in spatial stochasticity that depresses egg limitation actually concentrates a greater and greater proportion of the total population's reproduction in the hands of those few females that are egg limited. So it actually increases rather than decreases the ecological significance of egg limitation. And finally, it turns out that temporal stochasticity is not the same as spatial stochasticity. Temporal stochasticity actually typically elevates the risk of egg limitation. So the take-home message from the modeling work is that I couldn't really find any scenarios in which increasing levels of environmental stochasticity and reproductive opportunity eliminated or significantly reduced the importance of egg limitation. So I think then, to summarize the theory section, I think we have two predictions that we can go out and test. The first is that we should find egg limitation in nature despite high levels of stochasticity. And second, that egg limitation should make an important contribution to the cost of oviposition despite the fact that it's a minority condition in many populations. So how do we produce a strong test of this, of these ideas? I think one of the key reasons that this has been such a difficult controversy to resolve is that it's been difficult to design a really definitive test. What we're interested in, of course, is knowing what fraction of females in the field is exhausting their lifetime supply of eggs. How important is egg limitation? But for most females, they have complex ovarian dynamics. They're synovogenic. So they're continuing to mature eggs as adults. They may be resorbing eggs as adults. And therefore, there are at least three ways in which a typical synovogenic female can run out of eggs. She can mature them and lay them all. She may not yet have matured them, or she may have matured them and then resorbed them. So this is interpretationally then quite complex. So to produce what I hope would be a more definitive test, I chose to work with a strictly pro-ovogenic insect, no maturation of eggs during the adult stage, and I also demonstrated that this insect also does not resorb eggs. So this is the insect. It's a specialist herbivore, a gall midge, Rhopalomyia californica. It lays its eggs on the tips of these baccharis shrubs, produces these little bud galls. The females emerge very early in the morning. Let's see if I can use the pointer. They emerge very early in the morning. They spend the early morning hours and the midday foraging around on the tips of these baccharis plants. They then die typically by midday or early in the afternoon. They fall into these little dry pan traps that we set out in huge numbers. We can collect those freshly dead females, bring them back to the lab, dissect them, and count how many eggs they had left in their ovaries. Now, of course, to do that, we needed the cadavers, and we were concerned about the biasing effects of predation, so we also directly estimated predation risk and used that estimate to correct what we observed in our dissections for the effect of predation. So here are the results. So each panel here shows 1 year of the field data. And in each panel, I'm showing two sets of histogram bars. In the green, I'm showing what we project the initial egg loads of the females were at the time that they emerged based on their size. And you can see that females emerge with anywhere between about 200 to 400 eggs. Shown in black are the actual counts of eggs that we found in the ovaries of these recently dead females. So the leftmost bar you can see are females that were completely eggless. So these are the egg-limited females. And once we correct these data for the biasing effects of predation, we estimate that about 17% of all females are egg-limited, and that females on average laid in excess of 80% of their total lifetime complement of eggs. Now, some of you may be a bit skeptical regarding the reliability of dissections of dead females, so we also wanted to provide an independent test of the idea that there were eggless females in these populations by dissecting live females. So we collected females at different times of the day. Because they emerged at dawn and were dead by the mid-afternoon, our expectations should be that egg loads would rapidly decline over the course of the day and that the appearance of eggless females should occur around midday. And indeed, that's exactly what we observe. Very rapidly declining egg loads in the top panel and the appearance of a substantial fraction of eggless females towards midday. And we can finally use these results to decompose the total cost of oviposition into that component that's mediated by the use of an egg, which in this case was 57%, and that component which is mediated by the time required to lay the egg, which in this case was 43%. So again, exactly as predicted by theory, although egg limitation is a minority condition within the population, it's still making, in this case, a majority contribution to the cost of oviposition. So in conclusion then, basic theory predicts that egg limitation should be present in natural insect populations, often as a minority condition, but still making important contributions to the overall cost of oviposition. Stochasticity has complex effects, but high levels of stochasticity do not appear to eliminate the expectation that egg limitation should be important. So to test these ideas, I worked with a strictly pro-ovogenic insect, a little bit easier to interpret. We found that egg limitation is in fact present in these populations as a minority condition, but that it does make a major contribution to the overall cost of oviposition. And finally then, I think the implications are that insect life histories do appear to be evolving to balance the risks of egg and time limitation, and that therefore, if we're interested in understanding insect population dynamics or insect oviposition behavior, we need to consider both of these factors. So, thanks very much.
We have 1 minute for questions.
Mike.
This might not be a fair question, but in terms of longevity, the role of maternal care and just kind of their theoretical framework, that could extend a female's life beyond, but it looks like you're kind of taxing or focusing on didn't have much maternal care.
Right. So in this system, there's no maternal care. Clearly, I think you're right, that if you have a system with maternal care, the model would look quite different. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, Peter.
Jay, it seems like a lot of this is complicated by variation of lifetime reproductive performance. Is there a pro-ovogenic insect that lays a very predictable number of eggs where this might be studied?
Oh, boy. That's an interesting question. You know, I'm actually working with a bunch of pro-ovogenic species, and all of them show a lot of variation in fecundity as a function of body size. So I haven't found one yet, but it's interesting to think about. So,
thank you.